Insurance actuaries call it the most dangerous place on earth. Is that right, Matt Desarnier?
That is correct.
All right. And you got four guys here who are still flying high from spending some time on an aircraft deck during air ops, the most dangerous place on the planet, and touring the USS Theodore Roosevelt, also nicknamed Rough Rider and America's Big Stick. And Matt Desarnier is here today. He's the president of Girardi Insurance Services and also president of the Putnam Business Association. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Gary.
Ron Kader is here. Ron is a local legend. He really needs no introduction, but I just got to say, Ron Kader is in the house. He's commander of American Legion Post 13, doing a commendable job. The award-winning commander of American Legion Post 13. Also an Air Force veteran. Ron served from 1959 to 1963. Operating radar is what he did. Ron, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gary. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Good to have you back. Also here, the man who gave us, the three of us, this incredible opportunity, a man to whom we will always be indebted, and we just can't thank you enough, and just love this guy, man, and tons of respect. Tom Pandolfi is here. Tom is vice chair of employer support of the Guard and Reserves, one of the original Green Berets. He spent three tours, 27 months in the jungle, Cambodia, Laos, and Taiwan, 32 months in Vietnam, 1961 to 1964. This is the real deal right here. Tom, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gary. Thank you.
Good to have you here today. Tom, how did this all come about that the three of us get to go on this tremendous trip?
Well, the Navy has this fantastic program. They call it the Distinguished Visitor Program, and it's a program to bring high-profile people, educators, CEOs, CFOs, businessmen, people who have an influence in their community. So I took a group back in December. We went on the USS Nimitz, and usually it's a one-shot deal. And I came home, and probably a week and a half later, the Navy contacted me and said they were impressed with the people I brought. Do I want to organize another trip? And that's how this trip evolved with you guys going.
So here's a Green Beret making waves in the Navy. They're like, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. Come on back and bring some more people. I've had so many. I think the leading question I've had from everyone in my orbit, and see if you guys concur, is how did you get invited? And I said, well, I opened an email one day from Tom Pandolfi, and there it was. And it just it was a kind of invitation I had to read about three times to digest if this was real. Ron, you must have felt the same way upon being invited.
I was at the town hall, and Tom, of course, is the service officer for American Legion and for the area to direct veterans that have problems to where they can go for services. And I stopped in to say hello to him, and he handed me this piece of paper, and he said, would you be interested in going on this trip? And I looked at it, and my first reaction was, yes, I am. And secondly, I said, why are you asking me? And he said, well, I'm asking influential people in the community. Well, I wasn't sure that I fit that category, but I said, let me just go home and tell my wife. I don't want to ask her because I didn't want her to say no. And she just said to me, she says, Ron, go for it. That's if that's what you want to do, it's a chance of a lifetime. Do it. So I did it.
Matt, the days and nights leading up to the trip, how excited were you?
Just like a kid in the candy store. I know when I got the phone call, it was, it was one of those situations where I got the call from Ron, actually, said, hey, we've got room for one more. And kind of started going through it, and I said, basically, you had me at hello. You know, it's I was just couldn't be more excited. It was unbelievable. And I feel like, and Gary, you and I have had this discussion a little bit. The military, and I just feel like I've missed out on something because I didn't get a chance to be in the military. I got a chance to, but I decided not to back in the day. This is something that I just, this trip has just kind of made me really understand what it's all about. And, just really, I've been saying it, kind of a renewed patriotism that I feel with this whole thing, just unbelievable. And I think if I was 18 years old and I made this trip, I would be a career military person, no question.
The people is were certainly impressive, and the machinery, the processes, the systems, all impressive as well, but the people too. And we will get to that this morning. Let's start with our journey there. So we all assembled in San Diego, folks from all walks of life. I mean, we were four local guys, but as I recall, there was a gentleman there from Atlanta, Georgia, right. The gentleman from Arizona, a lot of guys from the East Hartford, Windsor area, Massachusetts. There were lawyers there. There were air enthusiasts there, people who do air shows and that kind of thing, and bloggers and all that. So 14 men and two women. We all got ourselves to San Diego. We met for dinner, kind of a meet and greet at a great place, by the way, right on the water. Tom sets the whole thing up. And then the next morning, we have to be ready and be at the base for 8:15. And we were escorted into the gate, and we took a nice tour of the Naval Air Station in San Diego. And then we did preparation to fly out. And we were flying out on what kind of a plane, Tom? What was that
about? C-2 Greyhound.
Yeah.
It's a cargo plane made for carry landings, brings mail, brings sailors, military people back and forth.
COD, they call it, carrier onboard delivery.
Right.
We were told that they like when that plane lands. A lot of times that means packages and supplies mail. And mail yeah. is coming in. So they like when that plane lands on these carriers. It's the airframe first introduced in 1965. I heard the Navy repurchased these planes in 84, 85. So it's about a 30-plus year old aircraft, but that's no big deal because B-52 bombers from 1964 right. are still flying. So that's no big deal. Turboprop and job one was a lot of... There was a lot of training, if you will, flight briefing, pre-flight briefing. We had to watch videos and hear from multiple people on what to expect. And the big deal was that we were going to experience an arrestor cable landing on an aircraft carrier, which can best be described as a controlled crash. And that's what they said. They came right out and said, it's basically a controlled crash. So who wants to talk about how you felt as we were for the real deal, flying in, stepping into that aircraft, and you put your head down and let's get in this thing, let's take off. What was
I'd
that
like to let Matt talk about that if he wants to, but I just want to say one thing prior to that, Gary. When we were in the vans and we in our automobiles and we arrived at the base, and I don't know if you remember this, but when we all got out of our vehicles, it was 8 o'clock in the morning, and they were playing the Star Spangled Banner at the base, and I think everybody just stopped and just stood at attention yeah. while they played that. And that, I think, was a stirring part of this trip.
Planned by Tom, of course. But it was so serendipitous.
Everybody just stopped. And I thought that was great.
Yeah. We are literally, we're all excited. We're all stepping out of our vehicle at the same time on the to prepare to go on to the base. And in loudspeakers, we hear the national anthem.
Right.
There's a flag flying. We're taking it all in, and all of us right on cue, bang, hand over hearts, and we just stood there in the parking lot and listened to the national anthem. And, of course, they do that every day.
And all the traffic stops.
All the traffic stops as well. Yeah. No one's going through the gate. Everyone stops and salutes.
It was an impressive start to our journey.
It sure was. So now there's pre-flight, and we put on our cranial, the helmet, double ear protection. They said you'll use double ear protection. It'll still be loud. We had our life vest on, and the life vest has a pouch that has a whistle, a strobe beacon, and a dye stick that you would snap to release green dye in the water. In the event of a water landing.
It's easy for the sharks to see us, too.
Yes, exactly. So we can chum the water. Exactly. So Matt, now it's time. We're really going. We're going to get on this thing and fly out to the aircraft carrier. Duck your head. You're getting on the plane. How are you feeling right there?
It was surreal. You step on the plane, and first of all, you notice you're walking into the back of the plane, which the cargo doors open, which is kind of a new thing for me. Flying Southwest Airlines is a little different. and then the thing you notice right away is the seats are facing the wrong way, in my opinion, but they're backwards. And then it dawns on you that, hey, you know, we are going to have a controlled crash landing coming up at the end of this flight, and how exciting that's going to be, you know. And but, it, you know, in the inside of the plane, I guess first thing I did, which is the wrong thing to do, is kind of want to touch the side of the plane and see what it's all about, because the inside is not finished. I mean, you see the pulleys, you see the electronics. It's a military plane, and you know, and I just kind of imagined to myself what it would be like, you know, heading into military or battle or something in this type of environment. I mean, you have a 4-point harness. You know, we've got the double ear protection, the goggles, and I just couldn't stop thinking about how, you know, how folks felt, you know, when they've gone into military situations, and you know, and how, you know, we were there for kind of a tour, a pleasure situation, you know, and it certainly was, but I just have more and more respect for these folks every day now that I've seen this.
Man, I thought the exact same thing. Once we were buckled in, and I'm sitting there saying, this is fun. This is Christmas Eve for us. And then I just visualized this plane filled with soldiers, and they're going somewhere dangerous, mm-hmm. and they know it, yeah. and they might not come back, and they may indeed have this water landing that they prepared for, and they may be maimed or injured. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, and I assume we all were thinking that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, no matter how many times I've done it, it's still a total experience. Yeah. It's just amazing. It is.
We flew out for over an hour and a half plus, and then, of course, we can't see anything. It's dark. There's no windows. We're facing the back of the plane, and then the nose dips down, and that's the telltale sign, okay? It's a descent. So, and the descent went on for some time, and all we knew from our training was that the flight crew in the front, again, we're facing the back of the plane, but the guys in the front rows would wave their arms, a big wave, and we were all watching for that arm wave because that meant we're like 15 seconds before it hit in the deck. So we're dipping, we're watching, and there goes the arm wave, and that's it. So what did you think when you saw the arm wave? Who wants to jump in on that?
Well, I think the anticipation was the thing more than anything. I don't really say I was anxious,
yeah.
because I just trusted these people that were doing this. So that took yeah. away the anxiety, but the anticipation was just great. And I felt the same things that these guys have just said about loading into that plane and wondering what the heck was it like for guys going yep. into combat that were in this kind of situation. So I was just waiting for the next thing to happen that they had planned for us and just had to put it in their hands. And the two guys in the front, or three, whatever yeah. they were really, you know, they didn't say much to
all
us.
Business,
but,
man.
All business. All business. And then you just have to trust the pilot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So that's where
exactly.
I did. I put my trust here in we go. All of these people, and here we go is right.
We catch the arm wave, we brace ourselves, and we hear the crash, the bang. The first thing that happens is the tail hook, which has been lowered, hits the deck first. It is being pushed down with 3,500 pounds of pressure, so it doesn't bounce off, because now we have to catch a cable. There's one of three cables that we can catch. If we miss the cable, we're flying off the edge. And so that's the first thing that happens, and it's crash, and it's metal hitting metal, it's scraping, and it's loud. Then the landing gear hits hard. They don't flange it, flare it down. They slam it into the deck because they want to catch that cable. They got yeah. three shots, and it feels like the airplane's going to fall apart. Soon as it makes contact, the pilot, who was taxiing in at about 150 miles per hour, he goes full throttle. Now the engines are at full throttle. You hear that noise come up, because if we miss the cable, we're going off the edge and we want to fly again. And then we hit the cable. You feel it hit the cable. You get pinned back into your seat. And before you can think that's not that bad, then the cable does its job. Now you go from 150 miles per hour to zero in less than 3 seconds, and the pressure just builds and builds and builds. And first it feels like one elephant is on your chest, then two, then three, then four, then it stops, it's over. And right away, things happen fast. We land. It's obvious we have landed. They taxi. The cargo door opens, and we're seeing sunlight. We're seeing a rising and lowering horizon. Noise. We're on the flight deck. We go down. They immediately usher us downstairs, where we met the commander and the admiral. Take it there, Ron. Tell me about that meeting.
Well, I'll tell you, when we walked in, first of all, I didn't realize that the admiral was there. And when we met the captain, Craig Clapperton, I just felt, you know, the Navy's in good hands just looking at this guy. He's fit. I would say, how old would you say he was? Early 40s, maybe? And he's very much in command of his ship. And then right away you start seeing and noticing the respect, just the way that he speaks. And looking around his office, the way everything is set up, I just said, this guy knows what's going on. And then, to my surprise, the other guy that was there, I didn't realize, was the admiral. And so I've always heard admiral stories from my sister, who was in the Pentagon and working for the Navy. And you always think of the admirals in their whites with their hats with all their garbage on the brim, and so prim and proper. And this guy's in a flight suit. And when he gets introduced, it was Sir, which was really, to me, very sincere. Mm-hmm. And then he starts speaking to us, and I felt like, this guy's a cheerleader for not only for us, but for the entire 5,600 people on that ship. So immediately, impressed. Yeah. Impressed. That was my feelings.
Matt, what'd you think about this admiral? I echo that. I was so impressed with this man, and a very personable man.
Yes.
As well.
No, I agree. I think he was definitely a father figure, you know. I mean, he was someone that you just immediately trusted, and you know, you felt. And then when you realized he is an admiral, you said, okay, I can see how this person could get to this level. Yeah. Because he's just that impressive, you know. Yeah. As far as just how he carried himself, how he talked about, you know, the folks that are basically in, you know, under his command, you know, one of the stories that really stuck with me was probably a little later on. Actually, the captain told regarding. You know, no one was more important than anyone else on the ship, you know, and he told a quick story about, you know, the nuclear engineers that come on, and, those folks are, you know, kind of hot shots in their field, and, you know, they're big deal. Right. And he kind of had this discussion with them when they come in immediately and talk about, well, you know, you might be the nuclear engineer, and, you know, they're also cooks and folks that are sweeping the floors and the whole thing. Well, he kind of made the analogy of, you know, I can shut down one of my nuclear reactors on this ship, but I can't shut down half of my mess halls.
Because nothing's going to happen.
That's right. So the cooks are equally as important as the nuclear engineers, as the pilots, and, you know, and everyone has a place and everyone has a job to do, but none of them are more important than another. Yeah. Which is just, it was just a mentality that, I guess, historically in your mind, you know, I guess you think of these folks as people that are just like, hey, you're going to do it my way or the highway, and that's it. But, you know, there's some psychology to this, and understanding, you know, how they portray it and how they kind of motivate you to really... want to do what they're asking you to do, you know?
No doubt about it. That was evident. There's a lot of science to handling people, and it's obvious they're very good at it in the United States Navy, and you have to be. You have no choice when you're on an aircraft carrier at sea, at war. We're going to take a break right here. We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back with Tom Pandolfi, Ron Kader, Matt Desonier, and myself, returning from our trip of a lifetime aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt during workup operations, planning for deployment somewhere in the North Atlantic. We'll be right back.
You talk. Tired of endless big bank checking fees? Core Plus Credit Union is here to help. With our Perks Plus checking, you receive free e-statements, free MasterCard debit card, free access to online and mobile banking, and no minimum balance required. Plus, there's no monthly service fee as long as you meet a few simple qualifications. At Core Plus, our members are treated like owners because they are. Stop in at one of our 9 convenient locations today or visit coreplus.org anytime. Core Plus Federal Credit Union, Equal Housing Lender, federally insured by the NCUA.
Core Plus, oh yeah, Core Plus.
Core Plus Credit Union.
Credit Union.
Core Plus Credit Union. CPCU.
Napa Putnam has been serving your driving needs for 3 generations. We would like to take this opportunity to welcome you to the newly updated Napa of Putnam. To help kick off our renovations, we are having a huge filter sale. All Napa Gold filters are being offered at 50% off regular dealer pricing. This sale runs from April 15th through April 30th. This is just part of what we have to offer. Stop by and say hi to the crew and walk away with some great deals. That's Napa of Putnam, 340 School Street, Putnam, Connecticut.
Jim Pepe of Pomfret talks about his experience with macholitis in Putnam.
My mother-in-law was living independently across the state in Winsted, reached a point where she could not live alone. We couldn't care for her at home, and she needed to go to a place, and macholitis was available, and we found it to be wonderful beyond any of our expectations. One day I'm pushing a wheelchair down a hall away from my mother-in-law's ward, and a housekeeping lady leans her broom against the wall, kneels down in front of her, holds her hand and says, "Magdalena, how are you today?" Wow, I mean, it's common. It's wonderful. Good administration, good medical staff, good family counsel. That makes a place pretty special. I'd recommend this place without reservation.
Quality, excellence, and caring is the promise to you and your family from Macholitis in Putnam. Call 860-963-0245. See them online at macholitisnh.org. Concert Choir of Northeastern Connecticut, along with the Manchester Symphony Orchestra and Chorale, presents their spring concert entitled Forest Tales, conducted by Dr. Kevin Mack. The concert begins at 3 p.m. this Sunday, April 23rd, at the Killingly High School Auditorium, 226 Putnam Pike in Killingly. Tickets are $15 per person, $5 for 17 and under, and available now at Pomfret Spirit Shop and Wine Shed or at the door. For more information, go to concertchoirnect.org.
Community Radio, WIMY.
Fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret.
Couldn't resist, Tom, coming back. I just, you know, we are talking about the Navy and aircraft carriers, but we got a Green Beret right here, the real deal, baby. And I've got to play that for Tom. All right, returning with our visit aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt. Correction on the ocean, that would be the Pacific. Going to the break, I said Atlantic, so I don't know if you caught that. Anyway, yes, we're in the North Pacific and quite an experience. Let's see, we want to talk about the two captains that you were. There were two captains we met on this tour, and you were particularly impressed by these gentlemen. Tom, tell me about it.
Well, not only these two captains, the other military bases are in all the branches of service that I've been to, but the people in command on a Navy, on an aircraft carrier, you have the captain of the ship and you have the captain of the air wing. Very impressive, very dynamic people. People that that instill confidence in you, people that you would follow basically into battle. That's the type of individuals they are, and it's no different than any of the other branches of service. So,
anyone else want to speak to that? Just the impressive, the knowledge base. I often wondered with the commanders and captains, and of course the admiral. What's the IQ? What is the IQ of these guys? The systems that they understand, the degrees, the flight operations, how to fly multiple aircraft. Oh, and then we happen to have a nuclear reactor. In fact, two of them on board, and they know all that too. Speak to them.
You know, one thing about it, a lot of these captains are higher command, graduate from the Naval Academy. some of them work their way up from enlisted right to that position,
yeah.
which is amazing. So the opportunity is there. And we spoke to a couple of naval women who were on a ship. One was from Chicago, one was from Middletown, Connecticut. And we asked them why they joined the Navy, and they stated, well, you know, there's no opportunity for us, dead-end jobs or no jobs. We could see our friends getting in trouble, and either they saw a commercial on TV or they visited a recruiter, and that's where they wind up. And they all say, you know, we're staying in. This is our life.
I think most people understand the concept of an aircraft carrier, a city at sea. Of course, it's a city at sea with all the systems that you would need for a city with approximately 5,000 or 5,000 plus personnel and everything that goes with it and all the systems, right down to people who do the laundry and cook the food and clean up, and right up to the people actually running the ship and everyone in between. And I was taken by opportunities. This is a ship that is loaded with jobs and opportunities. And I was impressed with the folks who are in charge of our tour, and they were all from the media department. And these are kids who are really into multimedia. And, you know, I'm sure, like, when they were in high school, they were perhaps in the video tech, and they were the kids running around shooting video and putting videos together.
Gary O's of the world.
Right. And now this is what they do. And there's this whole bank, this whole editing suite, and there's a TV studio, and they're producing video and videos every single day, taking still photography and doing some pretty remarkable things. Again, all different walks of life, not just people who want to fly planes and that kind of thing.
And there's also, you know, it's not a 9-to-5 job. They could be working 12, 14, 16 hours a day. The flight crew, the flight deck crews, they're the same crew that launches, that helps launch the planes during the day. And if there's night flight ops, they're back there at night.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have set hours.
Matt, were you impressed with how polite people were? Because it's narrow passageways, and lots of them. They estimate that on this tour we'll probably walk the equivalent of 5 miles, and just through this labyrinth of passageways. And they have what's called knee knockers, because it's all individual waterproof cells. So the doors are open, and about every 20 steps or less, you have to lift your leg up, and you don't want to knock your knee on these things. And go over this threshold and go into the next cell and the next cell and take a left and take a right, and you get lost real fast. So it's narrow. And when two people can't pass, one, somebody's got to hug the wall while the other passes. We did this for 2 days. Each time, I mean, here we come. We know we're all like lugging around. We got our cameras and stuff. And these guys are all, they're going somewhere. They're up against the wall. They couldn't have been more polite. Did you pick up on that, Matt?
I agree. And you know, yes, sir, no, sir. And it was just, I think if I was on that kind of enclosed environment for that long, you know, you start maybe lowering your shoulder instead of moving aside. I don't know. But these folks were just absolutely polite. You're right. And it becomes a way of life, I guess, you know, and the decision is made early on that, hey, we're all in this together, I think, is what goes on. And you know, you brought something up earlier. I think, you know, in talking to these folks, they're all walks of life. And I think some, you talk to some of them, and I think they're saying, hey, listen, I'm going to do my 3-4 years and I'll be out, and you know, I'm going to get a great education doing it. And what an experience. And then you talk to other folks that are, hey, listen, I've got aspirations. I want to be, you know, who knows, a captain or move the way up the ladder, and want to be in the military forever. And I'll tell you, just no matter what their story was, they were all just very, very, appeared to be very, very well put together people, and have been, you know, kind of ingrained into them that you're right. Just simple things like being polite and courteous are just really important, and they're just really important life lessons, never mind military lessons, you know.
Let's speak to a couple of things. Let's speak to employers listening. You employ people, you're an HR person, you hire people at your business, and someone comes and fills out an application, and they served in the Navy, they served on a carrier. Ron, let's start with you. Wouldn't you love to have one of these people working for you?
I'd hire them instantaneously, Gary.
Why? Why would you?
Oh, man. I mean, like Matt just said, the courtesy, the respect, but the understanding of what they have to do, that everybody has a job. When the captain spoke to us about, he mentioned even Bill Belichick, but everybody knows what they have to do, and it's a big team. And you know, one of the things that I was very impressed with was the night that we had dinner in the officers' mess. And first, the executive officer, to me, was just as sharp as the commander and the admiral. Yeah. This guy had it together. I happened to sit across from the new ops officer, who was a jet jockey before he took this position, and I was very impressed with him. And sitting to my left was the guy that was an attorney, and he was the legal officer on the ship. I learned so much from these guys. Then the next morning, going down and finding a seat next to two guys that had just come off duty throughout the night on this ship, and I was sitting there chatting with them. These were enlisted men who were just as impressive as the people we had had dinner with the night before. And I recollect the things that impressed me were when we first got there and we were on the deck watching these jets shoot off, being catapulted, and then landing, and how impressed we were with that. And then going up at night and seeing the same things happening in the pitch dark of the North Pacific Ocean. Yeah. And these guys are doing it with precision. Not only the pilots, but everybody else that had a hand in getting them off and bringing them back safely. And it just made me feel like, man, I am so happy to be an American.
Yeah.
And it took me to the next level of how my feelings are and the trust that I have in the military. And my brother-in-law is a 20-year Navy guy, and he rags on me all the time about the Air Force, and we go back and forth. But I told him the other day, I said, I have a true respect for you guys in the Navy. And he said, you probably want to join the Navy now. I said, I don't think I could have made it.
Tom, how about you? You're in a position and you're hiring people, and you're the one who says yay or nay. You got a resume and someone in front of you, they did some time in the Navy, perhaps aboard a boat or ship at sea, I should say. You hiring them?
Actually, I've hired many veterans. I was a flight manager for FedEx before I retired. And a veteran comes in, I put him to work the next day if he can start.
Why?
Drug-free, sense of accountability, attention to detail, reliable. And I've never had a problem with any veteran I hired, and I would recommend it to everybody.
Matt, I hire people at my business. You do also. Accountability, I was looking for that word. That's the one that strikes me. I'd hire any of these people in a second. You feeling that too?
Feeling it like you can't believe, Gary. We're coming back. Girardi Insurance, we're celebrating our 100th year in business this year, doing a corporate retreat next month, and there's going to be a business segment and the whole thing, and I was kind of looking for material, you know, what are we going to talk about? I just came back with so much material on you know, the right things to do in business and the things to focus on and what, you know, the big picture things. I just have more material than I know what to do with now. I mean, it's just, just a whole new respect.
And just like the Navy said, veterans that I hired and that worked under me, they come up with the ideas. You let them go, and they'll come up and they'll make you look good. Really. They're thinkers. Think out of the box.
That's just some food for thought out there for people who are in a position to hire. Take a second look at that. People who are squared away and accountable for their actions. Not making excuses. You don't make excuses on an aircraft carrier, do you?
No, you don't.
No. It's black and white. We're going to take a short break with our panel here today. Tom Pandolfi, Ron Kader, Matt DeZonier, myself. We just returned from the trip of a lifetime on the USS Theodore Roosevelt. We'll be right back.
You're invited to a free showing of the movie He Knows My Name this Friday night, April 21st at 7 p.m. at the QVCC Auditorium, Upper Maple Street in Danielson. He Knows My Name is set in the time of Christ when many were debating just who this man was. And a little girl determined to find out for herself experiences a miracle of her very own. Don't miss He Knows My Name this Friday night at 7 in the QVCC Auditorium, 742 Upper Maple Street in Danielson, presented by the Tri-State Christian Movie Ministry.
After years of using common porta potties at construction sites, contractor Brian Sage thought there had to be something better. so he and his wife created Pretty Potties. If you need a temporary, seasonal, or permanent outdoor restroom, Pretty Potties is the perfect alternative to the common porta potty. Pretty Potties are all handcrafted and thoughtfully decorated. Pretty Potties can be themed and are perfect for outdoor weddings, special events, pool areas, and backyards. Add a touch of class and country charm with Pretty Potties. Just visit prettypotties.net for more information.
Everybody's got a favorite spot.
A special place you can't replace.
A place that's like no other.
Store Eddie, Eddie's. It's the store I love to explore.
If your spring cleaning agenda includes some repainting, then it's time to visit your favorite store, Benny's, where you can get the year's best deal on Valspar paints. Choose Valspar Pristine or Valspar Medallion, the paint and primers in one that can freshen and transform every room in your house with durable, long-lasting color. And now through April 30th, in addition to $5 off Benny's regular low price, you can get a $10 Valspar mail-in rebate per gallon. See store for rebate details. Benny's, your favorite store for Valspar paint.
Benny's, it's the store I love to explore.
Get your sneakers ready for the Camper Scamper. Walk or run for the Wyndham Tallinn 4-H Camp on Saturday, April 22nd at the 4-H Camp Lodge, 326 Taft Pond Road in Pomfret. Registration begins at 8 a.m., the race begins at 10, and walkers immediately follow the runners. The course is mostly paved roads with some gravel, but it's all fun. And the 5K is professionally timed. All proceeds benefit the Gymlogy Campership Fund. So get ready to Camper Scamper. For more information and to register, go to 4HCampCT.org.
Register now at Quinebaug Valley Community College. Now is the time to register for summer and fall classes. Take a course this summer to catch up or get ahead. Most summer courses are online and have start dates in either June or July. Ready to register for the QVCC fall semester? Fall classes may not start until August, but now is the time to register and get the courses you want at the time you need. Meet with an advisor Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 4 p.m. and on Wednesdays we're open until 6:30. Get started at QVCC. QVCC.edu/register-now.
If you're looking for a new oil company, there's a few things you need to consider. Service, reputation, and reliability. Safeway Petroleum gets top marks in all categories. Safeway offers automatic delivery, 24-hour service, budget and tank protection plans, discounts on service plans. And Safeway Petroleum is a local family-owned and family-run business, not some big corporation in Oshkosh. Call Safeway today or visit SafewayPetro.com. Safeway, the right way, every day.
And we're back talking about our trip on the USS Theodore Roosevelt. During workups for future deployment, we were somewhere in the North Atlantic. I'm not exactly sure where we
North
were.
North Pacific.
I'm sorry, I keep saying North Atlantic. What's wrong with me? North Pacific. They're both pretty big oceans. So they kind of look the same. I'm not quite sure where we were, but it was really exciting. All right, let's get right to flight ops and our time on the carrier deck, which I think is clearly the most exciting part of this whole trip. Who wants to start on what we witnessed out there during flight ops? Go ahead, Matt.
I'll start. I think as you mentioned earlier, we crash landed on the ship, so to speak. We went downstairs, we met with the admiral and the captain, and then they said, we got to get you right upstairs, you got to see what's going on with flight ops. So we immediately got the double ear protection on, goggles, and went up on the deck, and watched some takeoffs, which are just very, very impressive. And then there were some landings coming in. Some of these, the Hornets and fighter jets. And we're standing, pretty close to where they land. In fact, the first one that came in, I was kind of looking around, and you can't help but step backwards soon as they're coming in. I mean, these wings are 20 feet away from you when they're going from 170 miles an hour to zero, and just the precision, like Ron talked about a little while ago, was just unbelievable. The first one that comes in is very, I will call it frightening. Yeah. But after that, you just have a sense of, my goodness, these folks know what they're doing. And after the first one, I wasn't nervous at all, but certainly gets your attention.
The captures are dramatic when they come in and land. And the takeoffs are dramatic as well. Different dynamics of both. Both are really loud, fascinating, and there's a lot going on. Ron, what was going through your head for that incredible time we had out there on the flight deck during flight ops?
Well, when I watched these jets being ready to be catapulted off, Gary, I could just envision myself sitting up there in that cockpit with the canopy pulled over me and the thrill that has to go into every time when you get shot off of that carrier. I was feeling that. That's one of my real bucket list things on my life. I always wanted to fly in a fighter jet and just pull the throttle back and go as fast as I could. And watching that and then being impressed when we asked, what's the average age of these pilots? 25 years old.
Yeah.
Young men who talk about careers. I mean, what a career a guy has when he's flying pieces of equipment.
And the airlines are waiting for you. The airlines are waiting for you when you do your time in the Navy. Yeah, the launches were incredible. Mm. You've got the opposing forces of the jet. The jet is literally sitting there being held back by the catapult. There's a piece of metal coming off the front landing gear, and that one little seemingly small piece of metal is holding this thing back. The blast door rises behind the jet. As the pilot, you know you're getting close now because you hear them go to full throttle. The engines wind up, and it's loud. It is so. We have double ear protection, and it still really wasn't enough. You feel the rumble in your skeletal system is vibrating while you're sitting there, and the pilot is literally sitting on the deck at full throttle and not moving because it's being held back by the catapults. And then they run the flight controls. If you can picture, the stick, they just do a 360 with the stick, and you see all the flight surfaces move. That's the last thing they do, and then they just sit there and wait under the bubble. The catapult launch is the guy, he has the last word. When everything looks right, there's a catapult that's been settings have been changed to adjust for the jet, the weight, the ordnance, the fuel on board, right down to the weight of the pilot. Mm-hmm. There's an individual setting for each jet that goes off. Checklist is done. And the guy under the bubble literally just hits the switch with the palm of his hand. He just hits the button and bang, the catapult is released. And the jet is thrown. It is thrown off the deck while at full power. And as I heard someone say in our tour, there's no way that plane's not flying. There's no way it's not flying because there's so much force coming at them. And it takes off, and they immediately climb. And at night, we saw this happen at night, too, so we had the thrill of afterburners. And we really got to see the afterburners kick just as they were taking off. And it was just thrilling. Tom, go ahead.
Also, the synchronized workings of the flight deck crews. They wear different colored jerseys depending on their jobs, but they work automatically. That's very, really impressive. They know exactly what to do, their area of responsibility, and they move when that jet goes, when the jet comes back and everything.
What were, I know we must have heard this, but they can, there's three catapults. They can only land one at a time, but there's three catapults, so they're lining up. But they can launch, was it every 30 seconds they can launch?
When we were downstairs, they were doing them every minute and a half, every minute and 45 seconds.
Okay. And then captures, where they come in, only one at a time on the capture, three. There's three cables they can grab. Sometimes they miss, sometimes they get waved off. What was the capture rate?
I think it was a minute and 15 seconds between planes that come
remarkable. In. Yeah, remarkable. Right. Someone asked, while we were up in the air control tower, someone asked, what's the big rush? Why do we have to do this so quickly? And someone explained that. You're out in a combat setting. You're in international waters, and small international waters, perhaps, and there's boundaries in the ocean, and you need 28 knots of cross. You need 28 knots of wind coming directly at the ship. You have to point the ship into the wind. You need 28 knots. Sometimes Mother Nature provides 28 knots plus. Sometimes Mother Nature provides 10 knots. So therefore, you have to make up for it by
creating
so the ship moves forward into the wind at 18 knots. Now there's your minimum 28 knots. Yeah. Now you're trucking along at 18 knots. You do that for an hour, and you could be in enemy territory, places you're not supposed to be. So they can't run out of ocean. So you have to get everyone down. We have this amount of time. You got to get on this plane. And they all circle and they wait. They just one dips down. They do 5-mile arcs around the ship. And
the carrier is pitching also.
The carrier is pitching. The deck's going up and down. The other thing I was taken by was there's not a lot of communication, not very little communication. They just kind of know what they do. It's all hand signals. Mm-hmm. There's not constant chatter between the pilots and the air controllers and the folks on the ground. A lot of hand stuff, and they just know what to do. The training is unbelievable.
That's right.
Unbelievable. So the flight deck was clearly, we saw daytime flight operations and nighttime flight operations. It blew my mind. The most dangerous place on Earth, as we started, is indeed a carrier deck during flight operations, which leads me into the medical unit. Tell us what we saw on board, Ron Kader.
Gary, I haven't worked in hospitals for over 25 years, and giving my own tours of the places, I was very impressed with the medical facilities that they had on board this carrier. And when we were up on the bridge, I was talking to this young man, and I asked him what he did, and he said he was a SMO. I said, what's a SMO? The acronym SMO, and it was a senior medical officer. And lo and behold, he was one of the guys that was guiding us downstairs. But the emergency department that they have down there, the fact that they have an ICU, a 12-person ward, people to handle psychological problems, and the thing is, in our particular case, that day there had been an accident where somebody had gotten their hand stuck in a piece of equipment, and they were actually doing some, I believe, surgery in the emergency department to take care of this person's hand. And the coordination, again, to get the hand out of the piece of equipment, calling in the facilities people to take the machinery apart to get the hand out. And they said that hours later, this young lady who had had the accident was walking around with her hand, and she looked like a big Q-tip with her hand all bandaged and taken care of. And
she was eating with us.
Yeah, just very... I was impressed. As you said, it's a floating city, and it has everything that you can think of.
And I think the other part was, too, everyone is trained to be a firefighter. You know, they talked about, you know, they've got 3.5 million gallons of jet fuel, 2 nuclear reactors, all kinds of bombs and ammunition, and it's kind of a fire hazard, I think.
And everyone has some basic medical training, and everyone's a fire person. Mm-hmm. Every single person on that ship as well.
Yeah,
I thought the there's an operating suite, and it's all modern anesthesia, X-rays, and imaging, and lab, blood labs, that kind of thing. And I saw some of when we're in the media center, some photos of the training that they went through, and I was looking at these gruesome mock-ups that they do for the training. It's better than any Halloween costumes I've ever seen. And they actually attach incredible wounds to the people during training. I mean, just the most hideous wounds you have ever seen. There's a big femur. There's a big femur that the doctor's holding up, and an exposed femur severed at the knee with blood. And I'm looking at it saying, oh, yeah, that's right. I immediately thought to the Wounded Warrior commercials that we've all seen. These people who lose limbs, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. If this is what you do, if you're a surgeon in this environment, that's what you see. That's the reality of what you see. And that was really made me swallow hard there looking at that. That's pretty serious stuff. We're just about out of time here with our segment. It goes by so fast. But, Tom, I'm going to let you have the last word here with opportunities. So you just know that listening today, there are parents who are listening today, grandparents, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters. Maybe you'll be at a graduation party in the next month or so with a new graduate from high school. And if so, we would like you to consider perhaps the Navy and what's going on.
Go ahead. Well, not only the Navy, any branch of service. I mean, I'll use my own son as an example, who could not find a decent job, was getting into minor trouble, wasn't college bound, and he finally realized maybe the military is a place for me. Went and did 2 tours in Iraq, became an Army Ranger, and very successful today. But the opportunity is there, free 4-year college education if you want, and you learn a skill after, if you don't want to stay in for make a career out of it, you learn a skill, you can come out and find a job.
Yeah. So again, there are opportunities. There are tons of opportunities. There are tons of jobs. We heard it over and over again for people. I mean, some were determined, and that's what they were going to do, man. And it was a predetermined future, if you will. But there were a lot of people who were they said they were free with their stories. A bad situation. I was running with the wrong crowd. I was getting in trouble or whatever, and mm-hmm. or very little opportunity. Very little opportunity in my hometown. And I wanted to see the world. I heard that many times from people. I wanted something better. I wanted some opportunity. And they seemed like they were doing pretty good and having a good time serving in the Navy and learning skills. And responsibility and accountability. So, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity.
Today's heroes are our military. They're not politicians. They're not sports figures. They're not Hollywood figures. And my son is my hero today.
Indeed. About 30 seconds to wrap up. We all feel the same thing. Ron B., our spokesperson, elevated patriotism after this trip.
Yes, and I'd say to any kid out there that's undecided, young man or young woman, think about the military. And I tell you, I'm very impressed with the Navy, and I am super at another level of thinking about our country and our military, what they're doing.
Indeed, we've always, I think, we've had a patriotic bent, all of us, some more than others, of course, but I'll tell you what, you can't help but feel proud of our country, the men and women who serve, and the confidence that we're in pretty good hands. That's it for our talk show. Thanks for listening.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the men. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless.